Blog Talk Radio.
For the first, half of the quarter, first 5 or 6 minutes of the first quarter in that game seven, if Oklahoma City is going to win. Do not be surprised or shocked if Memphis goes to Oklahoma City and takes game seven. Don't be surprised. Oklahoma City, I mean, Memphis already has won down there. They've already won in a game down there. They've won a road game in San Antonio. It's not, you know, it's not going to be overwhelming for them to go into that building and win a game seven. Now, would you have to, of course, favor Oklahoma City. History tells us, and I believe the percentages are 85% of the time, the home team wins a game seven, because normally, more times than not, the home team is the better team. So the percentages say you favor Oklahoma City. But this series has been strange. I mean, you've seen a lot of comebacks in this series. Again, last night, Oklahoma City was up by 13 points. You're thinking, hey, this team is ready to close out. They're taking that next step of a young team trying to develop into a championship team. Then, but Memphis, all of a sudden, you know, had a huge third quarter, which completely turned the game around. And then, you know, held on in the fourth quarter. So, you know, I like Oklahoma City in game seven, just based on history. But I would not be surprised or shocked if Memphis is walking out of there in game seven and taking on the Dallas Mavericks. Of course, we're going to be all over it. We will have the post game for that game seven at 7 p.m. tomorrow. So we'll talk about we'll do a 30-minute show. We'll talk about the game, you know, what happened, what the differences in the game. We'll also preview tomorrow night's game one between Miami and Chicago and the game one of the Eastern Conference Finals. And certainly we'll talk more about that as the program goes along. But this is the first game seven of the playoffs, and here is what Zach Randolph had to say about last night's game.
It's just going to be one of them games. We can ask for better. This is where we want to be. You know, playing game seven. Got one more game to get to the Western Conference Finals. So it's important, you know, and feel good. But, you know, the job ain't done yet. We know it's going to be tough going to Oklahoma and try to win that game. But we believe we can do it, and we committed. We got to be ready. It's going to be a tough game going in that place. You know, they're going to be ready. Their fans are going to be ready, but we're going to be ready also. So, you know, it's going to be a good game.
That is, of course, Zach Randolph, again, who has been the best big man in the playoffs, talking, giving you his thoughts on tomorrow's game, 7 down to Oklahoma City. Again, the percentages favor, and history favors Oklahoma City. 85% of teams that have, of the home teams, have won game 7 in the playoff history. And, of course, includes NBA Finals as well. You saw the kind of effect that game, that home court can have. In last year's NBA Finals when the Lakers took out the Celtics in a seventh game. So we'll see what happens. It should be a very good game, highly competitive. I don't expect a blowout. I know some of these games, you know, Oklahoma City really had their way with them on Wednesday night, but I don't expect that at all. I expect a close, tight game into the fourth quarter. Again, the whole Westbrook-Durant aspect has now taken on a life of its own in terms of Now you're actually paying attention in terms of how many shots Durant takes versus how many shots Westbrook takes. Scott Brooks can come out there and the players can come out there all they want and say it's not an issue. It is an issue. Now, it wasn't as bad last night as it has been early in the series, but still, the point guard taking 22 shots versus your superstar number one scorer taking only 14 shots. And I know Durant had some early foul trouble, but he still played a lot of minutes in that game. It's kind of inexcusable. Westbrook has to do a better job at getting the ball to Durant. Good subtle move by Lionel Hollins, who's done a tremendous job coaching this Memphis team. He brings in O.J. Mayo, starts O.J. Mayo over Sam Young. O.J. Mayo had a big game, going 6-12 and scoring 16 points. So that was a very good move that paid off big dividends for the Memphis Grizzlies. This is the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. I'm your host, Surreal Quinn, taking you to 12:30 p.m. on this 15th of May, 2011. excuse me, this 14th of May, 2011, 347-215-6180 is your call number. 347-215-6180 is your call number. The poll, the Saturday morning wake-up call poll question of the day is, who is now the favorite to win the NBA championship? We're down to five teams. You have already Miami and Chicago set to go in the Eastern Conference Finals. Dallas has been waiting seemingly now forever for either Oklahoma City or Memphis in terms of the Western Conference Finals. So who is the favorite now to win the NBA championship is the Saturday morning wake-up call poll question of the day. You can hit me up at twitter.com/WilliamGerald or at facebook.com/Tyrell Quinn. We'll be right back. After 11 o'clock hour on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call, here are your Saturday morning headlines. Derek Bogard of the New York Rangers was found dead in his apartment, in his Minneapolis apartment. Bogard was just 28 years old. He has spent most of his, he has spent the first 5 years of his career with the Minneapolis, with the Minnesota Wild. This was his first year with the New York Rangers. Bogard was one of the enforcers. Not only on the Rangers, but in the NHL, a guy 6'7", 265 pounds, was, again, a guy who was one of the most feared fighters in the NHL. The cause of his cause of death is unknown. They're going to run an autopsy, obviously, to see what transpired, to see how he died. Again, Derek Bogard found dead in his apartment at the age of 28. Second time in 3 years that the that the Rangers have lost a player who was a couple of years ago. It was about 2 years ago they lost another player who to death as well. Again, it's hard to pinpoint anything when you don't know what happened. You don't know what the guy passed away from. So we'll see. We'll certainly have some follow up on that as soon as possible. When we get the chance to. Celtic coach Doc Rivers has signed a 5-year extension at roughly $6 million a year. Rivers, of course, right after the Celtics were eliminated by the Miami Heat, said that he's leaning more likely to stay with the Celtics. And again, apparently he was very, very serious about it as, again, 5 years, 5-year deal at roughly $6 million. That's worth a total of $35 million. I think pound for pound, in my opinion, that Doc Rivers is probably the best coach in the NBA. Now that you got Phil Jackson out of the mix. Like, if I was starting a franchise right now, you asked me to take a coach. Now, Greg Popovich. He's a tremendous coach. He has 4 championships. But, again, if you're asking me to take a coach right now, and I'm starting a franchise, Rivers still relatively young at 49 years old, I'll probably have to take Doc Rivers. His team, he commands the respect of all his players. You saw what he did. You know, what he's done with the Celtics and coaching those egos. Now, molding Rondo into the player that he is. Former NBA player, was a good player at that, all-star caliber. So he's the kind of guy that you want coaching your team, because players are going to respect somebody, number one, that is no nonsense, is going to, shoot from the hip, and number two, that also played the game as well. So that's why one of the biggest reasons why I think Rivers has been successful. Plus, X's and O's wise, nobody is as good as Rivers coming out of timeouts, for the most part, executing down the stretch. He's just as bad as you would like to feel if you're a Celtics fan by losing, you have to feel great going into the future having Doc Rivers at the helm. Still to come on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. Pitching, and more pitching. We'll talk about baseball's. We'll talk about the year of the pitcher, part two, and we'll also have Friday night action as the Red Sox continue to roll over the Yankees. We'll talk about that, and the phoniest man in sports strikes again. That's coming up, and much, much more on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. 347-215-6180 is your call number. 347-215-6180 is your call number. Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. I'm your host, Cyril Quinn. As we look back at the night in baseball, Yankees, Red Sox over the Yankees, 5-4. Kevin Youkilis, 2-run game winning home run in the 7th inning. Clay Buchholz gets the win, his 3rd straight win. Red Sox have now beaten the Yankees 3 out of 4 times this season. You look at that, and the Red Sox are 18-20. So they're still trying to get over 500. And they still haven't recovered from that start. I mean, they're still trailing the Yankees and the Tampa Bay Rays in that division. Every time they seem to get hot, they take, they lose 2 or 3 games in a row. So that, they're still, it's the middle of May now. And they're still, again, that start, you don't want to get off to that, 0-8, 1-7, 2-8 start. 2-8 start, to begin the season with. Though, it's 162 games. They're still kind of fighting their way through. But it's still, anytime the Red Sox can beat the Yankees, that's almost worth 2 wins in the minds of Red Sox fans. Game 2 today, featuring CC Sabathia and Josh Beckett, should be a you would think a pitcher's duel. But the way these two teams hit. Who knows? I mean, they have Sabathia has had some tough troubles against the Yankees and against the Red Sox, and Beckett has had all kinds of problems against take out that start early in the season. But for the most part, has had some difficulty against the Yankees in recent memory. So we'll see what happens with that. Phillies over Atlanta 5-4. Ryan Howard in this game hit an absolute moonshot, 470-foot home run, dead center field, showing you how strong he is. as the Phillies, you know, get the win, as you know, the Braves are trying to catch the Phillies and the Marlins in the NL East divisional race. Cincinnati edges out St. Louis 6-5. Joey Votto, game-winning RBI. Cincinnati trying to catch St. Louis. Texas over the Angels of Los Angeles, Angels of Anaheim 4-1. Kansas City falls to Detroit 3-1. Justin Verlander coming off a no hitter earlier in the week. Last week, followed it up with a near no hitter last night. Had a no hitter going to the sixth inning. So Verlander again has been basically on top of his game. Only gave up two hits last night as Detroit took out Kansas City 3-1. You look at the game right now and where baseball is at right now, and no dominant teams, but no teams that absolutely are just horrible. So there's been a lot of parity in baseball as we speak. And, you know, pitching, you know, we talked about last year being the year of the pitcher. Well, this year has even been worse for the hitters. I mean, you have, you know, in terms of runs per game, the runs per game is at 4.19, which is the lowest it has been since 1987. So, you know, you talk about how you want to build your particular team. Of course, you think pitching and defense. But from an offensive standpoint, with the emphasis being put so much on pitching and how dominant pitching is right now, are you more likely now to go after that slap hitter? Or that, I shouldn't say slap hitter, because that, you're talking about a guy with no power. Let's say contact hitter who may hit 5 to 10 less home runs than a pure power hitter, but is going to put the ball in play, especially if you have aspirations to get to the postseason. Like, that's what I would be worried about the New York Yankees. Yankees have a lot of power. They're on pace to break the all-time record for home runs in a season. But does this correlate or translate to success in the postseason when you're facing absolutely the best pitching out there? Now, if you get a chance to get a guy like Albert Pujols, who can hit anybody, great pitching, power pitching, you know, not off-speed pitching, you can hit anybody, that's one thing. But, you know, if you have a guy who is, you know, almost strictly a power hitter, who is almost kind of feast or famine, that kind of guy or that kind of building, that kind of offensive team can really struggle against the kind of pitching that we're seeing right now. The way it is now, how many games have we seen this year where guys are taking no hitters into the fifth and sixth innings? You've already seen two no hitters with Verlander and the Florida pitcher who I can't, you know, to get off the top of my tongue right now. And Sanchez, Annabelle Sanchez. So, again, it begs the question, hey, if you're a general manager right now, do you rethink how you build your offensive team? We obviously know pitching. If you're going to build a team, you're starting with the pitching. You're starting with the pitching and the defense, because the defense has taken, you know, the defense now has become big to where it's, you know, where you're saving runs, where you want guy, where if you can't get that great offensive player or your team doesn't score a lot of runs, you know, saving runs is just as effective. Look at the Tampa Bay Rays. Tampa Bay Rays aren't a great offensive team by any stretch of imagination. Their best offensive player has barely played this year due to injury. And I'm talking about, of course, Evan Longoria. But yet they find themselves near first place in one of the toughest divisions in baseball in the AL East. San Francisco Giants last year won a championship with Cody Ross being their best offensive player in the postseason. And with Aubrey Huff leading them in home runs and RBIs. So it's going to be very interesting to see, you know, trades are made, or to just see how teams construct their baseball teams going forward, as it's clear and evident that this is not going anywhere. That pitch, you know, It is middle of May, and we have, I think, the leading home run hitter in both leagues has 12 and 11 home runs in the middle of May. Leading RBI guys are at 32, 33 RBIs. 2 or 3 years ago, a guy would have, you know, 12, would have by now at least close to, you know, 15 to 20 home runs would lead the majors, would lead the major leagues. Still to come on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call, the 40th man in sports returns, and we'll talk about, we will preview the Eastern Conference Finals on NBA on this edition of the NBA Roundup. That's still to come on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. Franchise that has suffered for years and years, and this is, you know, his first ever NBA Finals appearance. And, you know, you could do a little celebration, but a conference semifinal, that certainly was a bit over the top. But it didn't compare to the LeBron James press conference, and where he goes into this, you know, sentimental, apologetic mode, and again, kicks the poor people of Cleveland in the stomach by apologizing to them about, you know, the decision and how it went down and the whole bit. And to me, I'm thinking to myself, why can't LeBron just leave these people alone? I mean, first of all, the apology is about 10 months too late, number one. Number two, what transpired on that basketball court, getting over the hump in the Boston Celtics, has totally nothing to do with the Cleveland Cavaliers. It has nothing to do with the Cleveland Cavaliers. You know, it's one of those apologies where you, as an individual, are such in a euphoric state of happiness to where you say, you know what, let me just, I might as well just apologize. I'm apologizing for something I did to you in 2008. Like, who cares about, if you're a Cleveland Browns fan, if you're somebody in that organization, you have to be just saying, like, come on. Like, leave us alone. We already had one of the worst years in the history of the franchise. We're going to have a number one pick that nobody cares about. Yeah, Kyrie Irving. Whoop-dee-doo. Let's go sell some tickets for 2011-2012 behind Kyrie Irving. I mean, hasn't it been bad enough for Cleveland, for the Cleveland Cavaliers fans? And now LeBron has to remind you, well, you know, I had to make the decision. You know, I had the Wayne Wade and Chris Bosh versus basically what I had in Cleveland. That's what he was saying. I mean, he was saying that, hey, I made the decision because you guys weren't good enough, and I went to a situation where I thought I had great players around me. I could win a championship. We already knew this, though. We already knew that Dwayne Wade is better than Mo Williams, or that Chris Bosh is better than Jamari Abou. Do we need LeBron James to tell us that during the press conference? Again, this guy is the phoniest man in sports. Nothing about LeBron James is genuine. Only thing about him is genuine is his on the court, is his game on the court. I will never take anything away from his skill set. The guy is a physical specimen and the most talented player in the league and an all-time great as far as talent goes. But when he starts speaking, he becomes, again, you can't trust a word he says. Can't trust a word he says. As far as the series goes, I was very impressed with the Chicago Bulls on Thursday. Again, Miami game was on Wednesday. Let me get that correct, get that straight. Because it is, you know, it's one thing to close a team out, but it's another thing to close a team out on the road, and they did it in impressive fashion over the Atlanta Hawks, let's give the Hawks their credit, some due. They played very well over the course of these playoffs. Nobody expected anything out of the Hawks. Basically the same team that they brought back from last year who were just embarrassed by the Orlando Magic and getting swept. But they, you know, came out there and won around and took the Chicago Bulls to 6 games. So gotta give them credit. But the Bulls did what championship teams do in terms of game sixes. They did not allow it to get to back to a game seven, closed it out emphatically on the road. And that's the kind of balance that the Bulls are going to need in order to beat the Heat. Derrick Rose, you know, 19-12. Bulls are having a big game with the 23 points. You know, Taj Gibson and, you know, Joakim Noah. They're going to need balance. I mean, yes, Rose is going to have nights where he's special, where he's really special in terms of going for 35, 30 points. That's one thing. But you're going to have some other scorers, Luol Deng, Taj Gibson, Kyle Korver, some other scorers to step up to offset what the Heat can bring to the table. And I picked the Bulls before the playoffs started, And I'm not swaying away from the Bulls. All of a sudden, now, all of a sudden, that everybody has the heat in the finals to basically win their championship. I will take the Bulls in seven games. I think there's no match. I think Derrick Rose is going to have a field day against that Miami point guard, against whoever Miami puts on him. I also feel that it will get to a point to where Miami is going to have to match up one of their big two players against him. Forget about Bosh, of course. He's not going to, you know, there will be no chance of Chris Bosh guarding Derrick Rose. But either Wade or LeBron will have to, at some point, have to guard Derrick Rose in this series. And to me, when that happens, that fully goes to the advantage of the Chicago Bulls, because if you put one of those guys on Derrick Rose, then you are basically sacrificing the offense of one of your top two scorers. And to me, that could possibly be a difference in this particular series. Because either one of those guys has to guard Rose for a considerable amount of time, they are not putting up the kind of numbers that they put up against the Boston Celtics. And again, this is not Boston here as far as older and, you know, just unathletic. The Bulls are a team that can get up and down the court with Miami. They can also execute in the half court. Miami is not going to push them around from an athletic standpoint. They're not going to physically overwhelm the Chicago Bulls. It's not going to happen. So, again, it should be a very competitive series. A lot behind the scenes as far as, you know, the whole Derrick Rose, LeBron James, Dwayne Wade dynamic in terms of, you know, Wade and James, you know, come out and say they consider going to Chicago, which, you know, like maybe they can, how much they consider it. I don't think they seriously consider it. But they come out and say they consider going to Chicago. Derrick Rose, of course, was not kissing LeBron James behind in terms of, wanted him to come to Miami, wanted him to come to Chicago, sent him a text saying that, you know, I wouldn't mind being your teammate, but we don't need you here. He never said we needed LeBron James here, and he's proven so far that they haven't needed LeBron James, as they had the best record in the league and now find themselves with home court advantage against the Miami Heat. So it should be a great series. Kicks off tomorrow on TNT at 8 p.m., so we'll see what happens with that. Not done with the NBA as quite yet. We'll have some more things on the NBA later on in the program. But coming up, we're going local. We'll talk about local sports in the DMV. We'll talk about that, and we also have quotes as well on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. 7 minutes after the 12 o'clock hour. We'll be right back. Saturday Morning Wake Up Call, 347-215-6180 is your call number. As we go local here in the DMV, talk about some stories that occurred over the course of the week. Number one, Maryland hiring Mark Turgeon as their new head coach of their basketball program. Turgeon, 46 years old, formerly coached at Texas A&M, had a very good tenure at Texas A&M, led them to four straight NCAA tournaments, was Big 12 Coach of the Year in back-to-back years. They had a 97-40 record. This is a very good hire for Maryland. I mean, this guy is still a relatively young guy. He has excellent pedigree. He played for Kansas, coached at Wichita State. Remember the 2006 Wichita State team that lost to George Mason in the Sweet 16. He was the coach of that particular team. And, of course, again, played at Kansas, and a guy who, again, is a very good hire for a Maryland team. And this is what Maryland has to realize, and I think they realized it, that they are not a top 10, top 15 program. You know, Maryland is, you know, top 20, top 25 program. And, you know, the idea that they were going to get a guy like Sean Miller or any other big-time coach was not going to happen. The program is just not there. Gary Williams made it seem like they were a top 10, top 15, top 10 program because he was just that good of a coach. But in reality, they're not that level of program. But to me, this is a very good hire for them. I think he'll do a good job. Again, you like the fact that how young he is, and you like the fact that, again, that he's had success in a major conference, taking a non-basketball school and making it into a pretty good program. You know, Texas A&M is a football school. Let's not mistake that. And they're in the conference again with Kansas and Texas. So he did an excellent job at that school and should do very well at Maryland. Washington Redskins, there were some rumors about this. The Washington Redskins, a lot of talk about their quarterback situation and possibly that John Beck will be the starting quarterback for the Redskins whenever football starts in 2011. If you're a Redskins fan, if anybody believes that John Beck is going to be the starting quarterback for the Washington Redskins next year, you need to have your head examined. It's not going to happen. I understand how much Shanahan likes Beck, both Shanahans, in particular Kyle, likes Beck. But this is May, okay? And there are going to be some quarterbacks out there on the market. They're going to be some quarterbacks once, you know, this thing gets settled and teams are able to cut some dead weight as far as free agents goes, as far as guys who are making a lot of money and they try to cut them. And they will have those cuts to try to save money on their salary cap for next year. They, you know, you're going to have some more guys out there as far as quarterback goes. Again, that are much better options than John Beck. John Beck cannot be the starting quarterback for the Washington Redskins. You can't. I mean, John Beck is 30 years old. You look at the two teams that released him in Miami with Bill Parcells and Baltimore with Ozzie Newsome. Those two guys are very good evaluators of talent. So if they give up on a quarterback and not keep him even as a backup, then there's a pretty good chance that the guy just can't play. But again, despite all this talk about how the Shanahans like him, I would be shocked if come opening day against the New York Giants, if there is football and football season has where it started by then, if John Beck is starting under center for the Washington Redskins. As far as the Nationals goes, the Nationals again 18-20. And if you're a Nationals fan, I think you have to be happy on how the season has went so far. The pitching has been the bullpen has been off the charts. Jason Marquis has bounced back. Yes, you would like to see more out of Landon, certainly. Jordan Zimmerman has pitched well in his last couple starts and has had a couple of tough luck losses, but for the most part, he's pitched well. Your offense hasn't gotten going, but, you know, that will come. Word will get hot. You lost Ryan Zimmerman, which is, you know, obviously a big blow to your ball club. But 18-20, you're 2 games below 500. If you can finish near or at 500, I would deem that to be a successful season for the Washington Nationals. And so far, they've shown you that they're headed in the right direction. The team has improved again. Pitching and defense has improved. They're competitive. They've been in a ton of extra inning games. I believe they played 6 extra inning games. Lost one last night to the Florida Marlins, who are chasing the Phillies for first place. So you have to be happy about the direction that your team is headed in if you're a Nationals fan. And there's no excuse if you're a Nationals fan, not to be out there at the ballpark. The organization has clearly shown you that they're committed to winning with the Jason Worth signing. They're building their draft, building their team the right way through the pitching, through the bullpen. So Nationals playing well despite just being 18-20 on the season. Still to come on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. We will have React Quotes and Are You Kidding Me? That's still to come and much, much more on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call.
I very much doubt that.
And I can see Kobe Bryant in the background saying, man, just shut up. Just shake. I see Kobe Bryant in the background just shaking his head. Oh, pal, come on, pal. Pal, come on, don't say anything. Here's what you do to your pal Gasol. Here's what you say to your pal Gasol. After you've been swept by the Mavericks, you've had a brutal postseason. You say to the media, listen, I had a bad postseason. Didn't play the kind of basketball that I've been accustomed to playing with. I'll work hard and get better, come back stronger next year. Well, pal, what about these rumors that, you know, some personal issues and what? I'm like, what are you talking about? For what issues? I don't know what you're talking about right now. I don't even watch TV. I lift weights. I watch videotape and film. I was really into what the Dallas Mavericks were trying to do and how they were trying to defend me. I keep it so boring that the media doesn't even want to talk to me. That's what you have to do in the media. You have to keep it boring. You give the media any ammunition to come at you. They're going to come at you. In many ways, he was a target anyway based on the fact that of how poorly he played. When he comes out and brings up this suffering nonsense, I mean, the media basically had a field day with that. Like, oh, okay, pal, you were suffering. You know, it kind of makes sense. Considering, you know, what the rumors are about your wife, your girlfriend, and Kobe Bryant's wife. I mean, he gave them ammunition. He basically put a sign on the back saying, kick me. So, again, Gasol needs some media savvy one-on-one. On the Donovan McNabb, Donovan McNabb was called out by Bernard Hopkins. Again, I'll read you a couple of excerpts from this particular story. You know how many times I hear in the city from hardcore Philly fans that he's soft, Hopkins said. They're like, yo, Bernard, this guy is soft. Where do you think it comes from? Is it in his DNA, man? These are probably fans who obviously never been on a football field and taking that hit from a 6'5", 280-pound beast in the end. Look at professional boxing. I've never seen a suburban boxer be successful, Hopkins said. There has to be something in the DNA of a person's experience or what they overcame to have that grit. Like, I'm going to bite down and let it happen. I just didn't see that in him. This is basically, again, Bernard Hopkins calling out McNabb for not being black enough and for not being tough enough to deal with the things that he had to deal with. First of all, I mean, I would love Don McNabb to, number one, defend himself. The statement through the agent thing is kind of getting old and tired. And, you know, you need to come out and just basically slam Bernard Hopkins. Like, look, if this guy has a problem with me, we can always talk over the phone, or we can meet in person when it fits into his schedule or when it fits into my schedule. Don McNabb gets picked on by everybody. I mean, everybody comes out against Don McNabb. Rush Limbaugh, Terrell Oswell Owens, his coaches. At some point, you got to just, you know, stand up for yourself. But in regard to Bernard Hopkins, who just couldn't sound any, he couldn't sound more ignorant with these comments. Preparing, number one, you have to be tough to play quarterback in the NFL. And the question of Donovan McNabb's toughness is asinine. Donovan McNabb once played a game, a whole game, it's about a whole game, on one leg. He broke his leg in a game against Arizona about 8 or 9 years ago. And, you know, the injury was so serious that he missed the rest of that particular season, if you remember, in that 2002 season, and missed a playoff game with a broken leg. So questioning his toughness is just, you know, it's a bit much if you are Bernard Hopkins. And, you know, the whole thing about the suburban kid versus the street kid. And, come on, Bernard, what, suburban? There's never been athletes that come out suburban, that come out some suburban homes who aren't tough, mainly. I mean, it makes no sense. Or who aren't tough physically. I mean, that is one of the most, I mean, again, clearly Bernard Hopkins has taken too many shots to the head. So you have to be from the hood to be considered tough. just, you know, but again, but these are the kind of people that come out after you if they think that you just won't respond to them, or if they think that you won't, that you don't stand up for yourself. So again, you would like to see Don McNabb at some point stand up for himself and just not get beat on like a piñata. We'll be right back to wrap up the program on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. 25 minutes after the 12 o'clock hour, we'll be right back. Sorry to make a quick call. It's a real Quinn taking you again for the next till 12:30 this afternoon as we discuss the world of sports. Of course, we began with the Memphis Grizzlies extending this Western Conference semifinal against the Oklahoma City to 7 games. Game 7 will be tomorrow, 3:30 ABC. Should be a very competitive game, I think. Now, there are times when, you know, in a game 7 where things can absolutely avalanche on the road team. And, you know, there could be a blowout. And that, you know, we've seen it before, but I don't think that will be the case in this particular game 7. I think these two teams are basically close to being evenly matched as far as you can be. The thing that makes me nervous from an Oklahoma City standpoint is, number one, the looseness of how Memphis plays. They will not be the least bit intimidated by the moment or by playing in Oklahoma City. You know, this is unfamiliar territory for both teams. None of these teams' main players have ever been in a game 7, with the exception of of Kendrick Perkins, who's played in a couple game 7s with, you know, his days as a Boston Celtic. But when you talk about Durant, you talk about Westbrook, Zach Randolph, Marc Gasol, this is unfamiliar territory for those particular players. And again, the whole Westbrook Durant thing bothers me. As far as from Oklahoma City standpoint. Again, I picked Oklahoma City before the series to win in 7 games. I'll stay with that pick and for them to win in 7 games, but I would not be surprised if come, you know, around 6:30 tomorrow evening, once we have our program tomorrow at 7 p.m., if we're talking about a Dallas Memphis Grizzly Western Conference Final, would not be shocked. And of course, tomorrow we will have a post game edition of the Cyril Quinn Review, as we'll talk about Game 7 of the Memphis Oklahoma City game. Talk about the game. Look ahead towards the Western Conference Final. Also look ahead towards Game 1 of the Eastern Conference Final, which will also take place tomorrow night between Miami and Chicago at the United Center. So we'll talk about that as well on tomorrow's special edition of the Cyril Quinn Review. We will have a review, either Cyril Quinn Review